Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the world so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it.
I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today. Today's guest is Jim Thompson of Life Changes Be Ready. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, glad to be with you, Mark.
Absolutely. It's always a great conversation when we on and off the air. Now, on our last show, we talked about how God's delivered us both from addictive lifestyles that were holding us back from what he had in store for us. We discussed addiction and how it affects your ability to survive in a crisis. For the person who listened to our last show and has decided it's time to quit, where does he or she start?
That's a great question. And as we did in the last show, I just shared my experience, strength, and hope. And in your lead-in, you talked about how it affects your ability to survive a crisis. And I don't know about you, but back when I was using it and drinking, it seemed like life was a crisis. It seemed like I just went from crisis to crisis. And for those that are listening that can relate to that, I think for me, the place that I started my crash, and I know you've heard part of my story, was I had finally come to the end of myself, and I didn't want to go on living. I mean, I was only 25 years old, and I had come to a place where life wasn't worth living anymore. And I shared in the last section or portion that I still had a job and I was still, you know, a good job. I was working on the space shuttle. I was making good money but I had come to the end of myself and realized that, I couldn't go on living the way I was living. And I cried out. I said three simple words. I said, God, help me. And while I may have in the past asked for divine intervention in situations that I had found myself in, this time was different in that I did it without reservation. I didn't put any, God, get me out of this and I'll never do it again, constraints on anything. I was at the end of my rope. I realized that I had made a complete mess of my life and I didn't know where else to turn. And I said those three words, God, help me. A peace came over me that I had never experienced before, and I realized that for the first time in my life, I was standing in the presence of a power greater than myself, and realized at that moment the room was pretty. It was bright with light. Honestly, I couldn't see. It was a cold December morning. And I had this deep sense in my spirit that Christ was standing in the room with me. And the significant part of that is that I was unchurched, Mark. I didn't grow up in it with any significant religious training or background. My parents were into the occult, and my mother, you know, played with Ouija boards and things like that. And so I really had no idea who Jesus Christ was. Yet on that cold December morning, I stood there in this room, crying out and realized that Christ was in the room with me. And I had this deep sense in my spirit, in my being, just standing there, that if I was to follow after him, that my life would be radically different. And I made that decision right then and there. My life has been radically different ever since. That was about 11 a.m. on December 21st, 1982. And I've never turned back since that day. I've never found it necessary to use any mood or mind-altering substances. That's not to say that I haven't had medical issues. I've had three or four surgeries since then and have been prescribed pain medicine. I've you know, been in the hospital and used pain medicine. But I've always told the doctors where I'm at, and they've always made sure that I was clean and sober, free of it before I left the hospital. And so I've been free ever since. And so if somebody's, at that place where they realize that they need help, I'm here to say that I found help, in God, and I found that the answer to my problem was to be found in a relationship with God, and I've never regretted that decision that I made that cold morning.
And my experience was a little different. My life was an absolute train wreck when I hit bottom. So, you know, I wasn't working anymore, and I was just really at the end. And it was March 10th, 2004. And I'll share a little bit about how I've stayed sober for the past 11 years. I cried out to God. I admitted that I was an addict and a sinner. And I asked Jesus to forgive me and to give me the strength to live the way he wanted me to live. And I didn't really have that experience like you had with the feeling of him in the room and things like that. But everybody kind of has something very personal and something very different. But I still had that peace inside, and I knew that he was going to do that for me. While I didn't really have that type of an experience at that time, it's not to say that I haven't had some things that were extremely miraculous all throughout the past 11 years, of some things that God has just done that can't be explained any other way than miracles. And we'd probably be here all day if I started getting into them. So maybe I'll do that on another show. But I have definitely had my share of miracles, and I just keep having them, and it's really a blessing.
I think – let me just jump in here real quick. I think it's important to note that experience that I had that morning was the result of earlier in the morning I had loaded a shotgun. And I had a double barrel shotgun still, and I had loaded that gun and had called my mother basically to say goodbye. And while I was talking to her, I had I began to cry because I had admitted that I was an addict and alcoholic, and that I couldn't go on the way I was, and I got to crying so uncontrollably talking to my mother that I ended up hanging up. And as I went to walk through that doorway to get the shotgun is when I banged on that door jamb and said, God help me. But basically I was headed back to commit suicide because I couldn't go on living the way I was living. And I've come to know that there are basically, a couple ways, two basic methods of salvation. One is educational and the other is apocalyptic. And mine was apocalyptic, and from what you describe, even though you had come to the end of yourself, your awakening may be classified or could be classified as educational. It was an awakening, so to speak.
Sure. Now, the next step for me was that I went to a Christian rehab, because there was no way that I was just going to go to a meeting once a day or anything like that and stay sober. It just wasn't going to happen. So I needed that like inpatient type of Christian rehab, and it was a nonprofit, so I didn't have to pay. They worked by, you know, basically through donations. They had a thrift store that they used to support their operations and things of that nature. And it was based on the Teen Challenge model which was created by David Wilkerson, which we're both fans of his work. And so they used the one I went to. It wasn't a Teen Challenge, but they used a lot of the curriculum from Teen Challenge, which is very, very good stuff. And for people that are looking for something like that, and some people that need something like that, Teen Challenge isn't just for teens. And I have a cousin who came back from, Iraq, and, he was really, really messed up, lost his best friend over there, and got really heavy into drugs. And he went to a Teen Challenge in Kentucky. And I would say that was probably 4 years ago, and he's been sober ever since as well. And of course, that's all a Christ-centered program. So, it was really good. And while I was in there, I learned to live a life of discipline that revolved around Christ. And I developed a habit of reading my Bible every day, praying every day, and just continuing to learn about God. Now, once I finished the program, I kept doing those things and I stayed around the church and only spent time with people from church because they weren't going out to get drunk or get high. So, back to my cousin, for the guys who served our country and are struggling with addiction, the reasons you drink or get high might be very different from why I did. You know, you might be dealing with some really nasty stuff, and it might be stuff that I could never even imagine in my wildest dreams that you had to see and had to do while you were serving your country. But while the reasons are different, the answer is exactly the same, because the answer was exactly the same for me as it was for my cousin that came out of that situation where it was just the demons that he had to deal with inside. And Jesus was enough for me to get rid of those hedonistic habits of just wanting to please the flesh. And it was enough for him, who just needed some way to turn off those demons or those voices or those memories or whatever you want to call them. It was enough for both of us. So while the reasons we got high were different, the answers was exactly the same.
That's a great point. I know that in my own life, my story is just a little different. That morning that I cried out, I ended up, after I'd gotten calmed down and realized that that life was worth living and that God was there for me, the company that I worked for at the time had a recovery program, and the insurance paid for it, and I ended up doing 30 days in a very concentrated environment at a rehab that was owned by the Lutheran Church. And while I'm not Lutheran, I'm grateful that they had the foresight and the means to have a rehab. And I went into it. I did 30 days in there, very intense recovery work. We had group therapy every day after lunch at 1 o'clock for like 4 hours, and with a trained counselor, and it brought me to an understanding of the physical, mental, and spiritual aspects of addiction. And after I got out of there, I started going to a 12-step program and started to go to church as well. And my recovery is today based on that spiritual foundation that I discovered in the church that I was going to. Since that time, I've actually done some volunteer work with Teen Challenge. They have a camp about 30 miles from my house, and that's a great program. I've also continued to work with others through the 12-step program that I first found recovery in, and I don't limit it to any one thing. So, you know, for me, the church, my relationship with God, the churches that I've attended through the years, and the recovery, first off, getting clean and sober, secondly, learning to work with others, and then thirdly, working with others, you know, giving it away. I've discovered that I can't keep, what I've got without, sharing it with others, and I think that's probably part of the motivation for you and I doing. I think we both realize that. That's part of the motivation of why we're doing this this series of podcasts, to share that there is hope, that there is recovery out there, and that there is a way, especially in view of how uncertain the future is economically, and the fact that the poop could hit the propeller at any moment.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. KD Armor offers affordable body armor, including level 3 trauma plates made of AR-500 steel. They can endure multiple rounds from pistols and rifles up to 7.62 NATO. Their plates are available with Rhino Linings coatings to reduce spaw. Go to KDArmor.com, that's CATIArmor.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick cloth, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And one of the things that we talked about in the last show was the different consequences that would be associated with addiction, the drain on your resources, the inability to focus on the survival things that you need to be focusing on, like security and food and water and shelter, because all your resources and all your focus is going towards your addiction and you just can't do that. But I think maybe one of the things we might have skipped in that last show was what a drain you become on your family or on your support group. And, you know, if you don't have that motivation, because it's sometimes it's hard, you know, when you haven't really hit the wall yet, sometimes it's hard to find the will to make that step and to take the first, start making the first steps towards getting clean. So if you can't do it for yourself, I mean, you have, at the end of the day, you kind of have to do it for yourself. You have to want to do it. But, you know, maybe it's one of those things that just a little help, a little extra motivation is to think about the drain that you're going to be for your family, for your wife or for your children or for your mom and dad, and how much harder it's going to be for them to survive if they're having to deal with your addiction, because your addictions don't just affect you. They end up affecting everybody around you.
That's absolutely right. And one of the things that by the time I had reached the place where I had, that I just described, that morning, that cold December morning, I had pretty much alienated all of my immediate family. Nobody wanted to have anything to do with me. They were tired of being ripped off. They were tired of being let down. And so consequently, they had kind of pushed me out of their lives, as had, I didn't have any real close friendships or anything. I had, you know, a few, the friendships that I had were friendships of convenience, if you will, in that, I only hung out with people that, used and abused like I did, that maybe had a lot of the same, shortcomings and failures that I had, you know, and I gravitated towards those people because there was no, expectation. There was no contrast, you know. Whenever I got around my family, I always had an uncanny knack for getting drunk or high at just the wrong time and making an idiot of myself or stealing from somebody or what have you. And they'd just gotten tired of it. And so now let's magnify that in a grid down situation. How long do you think, people that are continuing to use and abuse are going to be, welcome? When things are really tough. So, the alternative to that is to be pushed out of a group, pushed out into the mean, streets, so to speak. How long do you think you'll last in the mean streets? You know, if you can't get along in your support group, the alternative isn't any better. I mean, it's much worse, especially once the flag goes up and things get bad. So, getting right now, getting clean and sober now, getting right spiritually now, as I said in the last broadcast, now is the best time. And I think listening to your story, I think you've came to that place too, where you realize, look, I don't have any more tomorrows. I mean, today is the only thing I've got today, and I've got to do something today. And I think in a big, problem, or a bad, you know, SHTF situation that family members aren't going to tolerate the shenanigans. The wife and children who are marginal in this environment are going to be completely, unforgiving and unsympathetic when things are really bad. So, now's the time. Today's the day.
Yeah, and like we just discussed, there's a lot of resources right now. There's a lot of places like Teen Challenge, the place I went, which was called Faith Farm, Calvary Chapel. They have several different ones of those have what they call Calvary House, and there's just a huge plethora of resources out there right now. They're there that can help you, because you might find that you're not going to be able to do this on your own. You might not be able to do it by just going to a meeting, once a day or once a week or whatever's available. And you may have, it may take some time away from everything, whether it's 30 days or 6 months or a year. And And you can do that now because those programs are available. And after the collapse, they may not be, because there may not be the resources for people to support those programs. So when the support dries up, then all those things go away. So and as much as you or I might like to help somebody right now, in a post-collapse world, it's going to be difficult for people like you and me to put ourselves and our families at risk to take a chance on somebody that's in a very volatile situation. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Think about that. Think about the alternative. You know, so often, unless we have some trigger that forces us to look at the cold, stark reality of where we're at, we just, you know, we're creatures of habit for the most part, and we get stuck in a normalcy bias, and we continue to think that today is going to be like this forever. And you hit the nail on the head. There are plenty of resources available today that may not be available tomorrow should things really begin to unwind. And while we've talked about the negative consequences of addiction and a post-collapse or a collapse scenario, think about the alternative. I was just thinking about that as you spoke, that, listen, now is the time, and I can't begin to describe to you how much better my life got as I began to work a program of recovery, and how I began to change internally, and how my attitudes changed, and how my belief system changed, and how things began to get better. And so I would be, if I were marginal now, or if I'm contemplating, you know, yeah, I know I got a problem, but I'll fix it tomorrow. Today's the day, and now is the time to be putting your ducks in a row so that you, have some foundation, some solid foundation, because like you just described, Mark, I'm not going to be very sympathetic, given tougher situations to somebody that's marginal, because I've got others in my group to protect and to think about. It's not just about me anymore. It's not just about the individual. We have to think about the consequences of our action and how it affects those around us. And since you and I are prep-minded and have taken steps for quite a while now to become more self-reliant, I'm going to look really sourly at somebody coming and wanting to get in my group that's a problem. And so now's the time to get clean and sober. Now's the time to put your ducks in a row so that you become an asset to a group and not a liability.
Being in the prepper world, I'll hear even Christians who say they're stocking up on booze and cigarettes as barter items. Are they underestimating how dangerous it's going to be trying to engage in trading with an active addict after the apocalypse?
Well, I don't know about you, but I have plenty of stories in my past that probably shouldn't be aired public that would illustrate the point that you just made. People that are under the influence are erratic at best, and you're gonna put yourself in a position to go barter with somebody, trading things that are morally questionable to somebody that's erratic or under the influence, you know, or using it. And listen, let me say this: I don't want to give the idea or the premise that I'm holier than thou and that you shouldn't drink. I don't think so at all. I think that that God, alcohol is part of God's creation, and under the right circumstances for the right individual, there's no, at least in my study of the scripture, maybe somebody can point me in the right direction, but I've never found any prohibition against alcohol in the scriptures. Just the opposite. You know, that it can be used in a time of celebration. Unfortunately, I've used up my right to alcohol. If in God's economy, every individual is allowed one or two drinks a day for every day of their adult life, that means that I can't drink again until about the year 2165, because I've already used up all of mine and yours and everybody else's. And so going out and thinking that you can use these items for barter, I think is pure folly.
And I think you're right. And I think that alcohol can even have some medicinal purposes. We see it in Proverbs 30 or 31, you know, giving strong drink to those that are suffering in a grid down scenario where you may not have access to pharmacies for people that have, somebody that's been shot or somebody that's had a really serious accident, and that's the only type of painkiller you've got from, especially if you have to perform any type of a surgical procedure. Plus, it can be an antiseptic, an anesthetic for pouring on the wound, or even cleaning your instruments before you have to perform a procedure. So it certainly does have its benefits, and I'm certainly not browbeating anybody that's stockpiling it for those purposes. But I think when you start thinking about it in a barter situation, you start thinking about the type of people that are going to give up their few precious resources that they have in that type of a scenario for a drink, might just be some of the most dangerous people on the planet.
Oh, I agree. And keep in mind, I mean, Cindy and I, back when we started focusing on our medical preps, we started looking at alternatives to store-bought medicines and things that we could replicate even in a grid down situation. And part of the things that we did were to take and make decoctions using grain alcohol. And I to this day, I've got some flu medicine. If you're familiar with a commercial product called Sambucol, it's got elderberry extract in it. And so I went out and found the elderberries grow here in my region. And so Cindy and I would go out and pick them and dry them. And then we would, infuse them into, grain alcohol to make, a flu medicine. And it's amazing how effective it is. And for the listeners that want to, you can look up elderberries, you can look up the genus and species that are acceptable, and then there are recipes online for taking alcohol and infusing the elderberries into the alcohol and then using it as a medicine. So you hit on a key point. But again, let's look at it at this point. Isn't part of being self-reliant, isn't part of being sober and prudent to plan so that you're not putting yourself at risk? Isn't there a proverb that says a wise man looks ahead and sees danger and hides himself, and a fool rushes headlong to his death? And I am of the opinion that as things begin to unwind, I don't want to be out there at the 11th hour trying to get preps or get this or get that. And the whole reason for my preps is to insulate myself, to allow me to be self-reliant and not have to go into harm's way unnecessarily. And so using alcohol and cigarettes as a barter item, I think the word that I would use is folly.
And also as a caveat, for anybody that's just coming out of addiction, or if you're in your early stages of recovery, if you're in that first, I'm going to say, 3-year period, you shouldn't even consider having any alcohol in your house for medicinal purposes or any other reason. Now, once you get past that and you've got a strong relationship with Christ and you're not dealing with those temptations anymore, then that's something that you can analyze on a personal level and decide if that's something that you're going to be strong enough to deal with, because you'll be much better off to deal with having to get by without alcohol for medicinal purposes if you're a recovering addict than having to deal with a relapse. Now, we all need a support group after it hits. For an addict, it's good to find somebody who's overcome addiction for some length of time. Do you think that's true?
I think so. I think for me in my early recovery, it was important to be around people that were like me and that had the same values and the same desires and the same wants and were striving to do what I was doing. And you know, I use the expression, I don't think Daniel went back into the lion's den to get his hat after he was delivered from it. For me to go back into a bar room or that type of situation when I've escaped from that is a temptation that I don't that is unnecessary. I for years afterwards I didn't run from the booze aisle in the grocery store or whatever. I didn't go in liquor stores. I didn't put myself in slippery places, and therefore I didn't slip. And I've since that cold December morning, I've not found it necessary to do anything like that again. I've not found it necessary to use and abuse drugs and alcohol, because I've been delivered from it. And that craving, that desire, left after about 6 months of continuous sobriety and being clean, and it's never returned. My wife, when we got married, I was 5 years clean when I met Cindy, and we've been married. This is our 27th year of marriage. And out of respect for me, when we'd go out, she never drank. She doesn't have a problem with it. She can drink a glass of wine, and it's not no big deal to her. But to this day, she very seldom ever drinks. Sometimes with friends, she'll have a glass of wine. But with her, it puts her to sleep. With me, it's like pouring gasoline on a fire, man. It's like I'm ready to rock. And I've never understood that how somebody can drink, just not even make it through a glass of wine. I mean, I didn't even get good and started until I had a bottle of wine in me. So it's important to insulate yourself and to have that support, Mark. I think that's and I know how you've achieved it, and I know what I do. Even today, after all these years, I still have a real rock solid support group. And it's the motivations and the people have changed, but that support group is still there, and it's still an integral part of my daily routine. My getting up in the morning and studying the scriptures and having a quiet time, meditation, all of those things have become the bedrock of how I stay clean and sober. And in the beginning, they seemed a little bit strange and unnatural, but as I began to practice, that faith muscle got stronger and stronger, and today it's just something that I get up and do. And I've been in some pretty tough situations in this 32 years, and I can tell you that in a have-to situation, you can do it by yourself. It's not pleasant. It's not recommended, but you can do it. I don't recommend it. That white knuckle in it is not good. It's better to have people around, even if in, like, let's say in a grid down situation, that nobody else in the group that you're with is suffering or has suffered from addiction. They're still human, and they still suffer the same foibles that humanity does. And so a lot of those feelings that you have, you're able to share with them. I know in my situation that a lot of the Bible study groups that I've been in over the years, I've been the only person in recovery in the group, yet I've found commonality with those individuals because we all suffer the same feelings and the same difficulties in dealing with situations. They just don't have that kindred spirit with me regarding addiction. It's like shipwreck survivors, how they can mingle with society, yet when they get back together for reunion, there's a bond that nobody understands. And I think that's something that you experience when you're around people that have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, that you can relate to them where you can not relate, or relate to them in a manner that you don't with other people.
And exercise is a fantastic way to sort of cope with stress and depression as well. Kind of gets those endorphins going, because for addicts, you've been pumping something into your system that's been triggering your endorphins, and you've just wore those endorphin firing mechanisms in your system. You've just completely blown them out, and they're not working properly anymore. And exercise and sweating that out, it can help you to sweat out some of the toxins, and it can also help to repair those endorphin producers as well in your system. So I think that's a great way to cope with stress, anxiety, and depression. And if anybody's dealing with any of that stuff, I think that's a great place to start, rather than going to the doctor and saying, I'm depressed. And, because the doctor, the first thing he's going to want to do is throw a pill at it, because that's what they do. That's what they've been taught is right. And it's the only thing they know to do. So, exercise is just a great way to deal with all of that stuff. Can you give us a couple other good coping mechanisms?
Well, you know, again, it may sound a little cliche, but in the beginning, there was an acronym that I used that was called HALT. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I didn't get too hungry. I didn't get too angry. I didn't get too lonely, and I didn't get too tired. I wanted to make sure that, I started to find some balance and that I put those bright lights of excitement from my active addiction, in the rearview mirror. I want to echo exercise. For me, when I first got sober, I met a man who was 7 years sober, and he kind of took me under his wing. He was about 20 years older than I was, but he was a marathoner. He had overcome an addiction to alcohol and Valium, and he had done it through running and as part of his recovery program, and he got me interested in running, and I started running, and even though I was still smoking, I found that it helped me to quit smoking. And then I started taking a martial art, and to this day, I still take a martial art called Aikido and have for, you know, since January of 83. And, it's just become part of who I am. Not only is it good for me physically and mentally, learning to deal with stress, but it's also, a great way to protect myself, and it's become part of who I am. But initially, I think if you're just getting clean and sober, one of the things I would recommend is making sure you got some candy around, especially if you were a heavy drinker, because, that sugar that, keeping that candy around, helps to keep those cravings away. And I know that I've known lots of people that were early in addiction that made sure they had candy around, or they would eat a candy bar here and there, and that helped to blunt that withdrawal bought them some measure of getting that temptation down.
Yeah, 11 years into it, man, I'm still on the ice cream and the coffee. But I'm a functioning addict, so
that's right.
The Rocky Road and Breyers has got one. It's called birthday cake, and it's got the little sprinkles and little pieces of birthday cake in it, and vanilla ice cream. It's just, oh my gosh!
I like chocolate and pastries. I love chocolate. To this day, I still eat a lot of chocolate, and I do like my pastries. I love. Love all forms of cake and cookies and stuff like that.
And as I mentioned in the last show, if there's anybody out there who's struggling with addiction, you can email me, prepperrecon@gmail.com, and I'll do whatever I can to help get you pointed on the right path. Jim, such great advice. Tell us one more time what all you've been working on over at LCBR and where folks can find your work.
Well, again, lifechangesbeready.com is a website that we're doing all the webinars for 2015 under. Summerofsurvival.com is still active for those who are new to prepping or looking for more material. We have a ton of material there. So you can go to summerofsurvival.com, or you can go to lifechangesbeready.com. If you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at info@lifechangesbeready.com. For those of you who are struggling and want more information on how to overcome addiction and alcoholism, the first step is admitting you're powerless and seeking out help. And I'm here to help you any way I can. No matter where you are in the listening audience, there are resources close by you, and either Mark or I can put you in touch with people that know how to get you the tools you need to be victorious in life and quit living miserably. What I found out in life, Mark, and I think you have too, misery's optional. Pain and suffering are part of life, but misery's optional, and you don't have to be miserable anymore.
Very well said. Jim, thanks again so much for taking time to come on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Mark. It's always a pleasure to be on with you, and I really enjoy your friendship.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2. Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A Globalist Conspiracy Transpires by by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback or audio edition at Amazon.com today.